When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Grant is going to take over in just a moment. You know me, I'm Eli Sussman of Fish Stripes. It's Grant's weekly State of the Fish Twitter space. A lot easier to do this coming off that win on Sunday as opposed to what was otherwise a winless week up until this point. There's a whole lot to unpack from just this individual game, but we're probably going to take a look at both the previous series against the Braves. As much as you're reluctant to relive that, we want to look back at the whole previous week and where the Marlins are at while Grant works through his mic issues before getting into where they are now at 17 and 18 somehow in continuing to win every single one-run game. Later in the show, we take your questions. Romeo knows the drill. He's already requested, but we're going to get to that later in the show. All your questions you just request. Raise your hand if you have a topic or a particular question that you want to get to. But I think Grant, I just have to set him up one more time. Grant, you haven't figured it out yet? Not quite. It'll be one more minute until Grant is in with us. But yeah, later in the show, raise your hands on here, a request to speak if you have a question or a topic you want us to cover, because this is a huge inflection point in the Marlins season. It could have been, if they lost this game, the consequences of Sunday's loss would have been pretty far-reaching. That was a game they had to have, and they were able to have it. So we're going to try to get Grant set up here one more time.
All right, can you guys hear me?
Yes, we can.
All right, because last time we had this problem, I muted and I couldn't get back from off of unmute, so I'm gonna stay unmuted this entire time. But keep going where you left off at. I had to miss like the first like minute there of the spiel.
Yeah, we could reset to, as we usually do, go through this week. So probably rewinding first to the Braves series and start off with. Yeah. Well, what was a pretty deflating series, a reminder of where the Marlins really stand in the power hierarchy of their division.
Yeah, it's pretty sad. We haven't talked in a couple weeks, but the Marlins have only played two teams during that time span. I don't know what the schedule makers were thinking with that, but it was another pretty miserable series against the Braves. They did not get a win this time like they had last time in the comeback ninth inning where they scored five runs, but that was a pretty miserable series. That was the kind of the theme this week. Today was the first game I got to watch live. I watched every condensed game, but every game was a brutal watch. The odds has already hit that point in the season where they're just boring. And if the pitching's not on, obviously it's a recipe for disaster. And that Tuesday game where Sandy pitched was probably the most frustrating game I've seen in a long time. And like Eli said, the divisional hierarchy will always be like this, it seems, unless the Marlins go under new ownership or have one of the greatest draft class ever. But I was looking at the standings before this just to get a grasp of where things stand, and the Marlins are almost as far back from the Braves while they sit in second place as Cardinals sit back from the Pirates while they're in last place in the Central. So that tells you anywhere about where the NL East is at. I feel like that's pretty telling. I mean, the Mets and Phillies haven't gotten off the great starts either, but they're both sure to get it together. Just slow starts for both teams. The Phillies always turn up towards the end of the season, as we saw last season when they made the World Series, and the Mets have too much power to not get it together. They've hit some strokes of bad luck, but the Braves, they're good. They're the best team in the National League, I feel like. I think they are better than the two teams playing right now on Sunday Night Baseball. The Braves are very, very good. But luckily for the Marlins, they don't have to see them again until June with this new schedule layout, which I'm starting to like. At first, I was kind of on it, but less Braves and less Mets, I feel like, will benefit the Marlins in the long run. And now they've already got the Cubs out of the way, too. They did win this season series against the Cubs. Didn't really feel like it with the way this weekend went. But at the end of the day, Wrigley is really tough place to go win at. Those 220 games, the Cubs are always going to bring out some loud and rowdy fans and sold out crowds. And today was a gutsy win, it was still a pretty miserable series, and there really wasn't a lot to take away from today, but it could easily be a 6-game losing streak right now, so definitely have to look at the positives and just say that, hey, they did win a game today. They won a pretty tough game, but at what cost? As you guys heard talking from with Skip's interview at the beginning of the show, they went deep into their bullpen today, even when Sandy went 9 innings, which is mildly concerning. And something that was actually very mildly concerning that Skip said was they're prepared to pitch Chi-Chi. I'm not a big supporter of Chi-Chi Gonzalez. I think he's a scrub, like simply put. But the Marlins got options. This bullpen's been really good all season long for the most part up until maybe this week. But good news is the Braves and Cubs are out of the way. The Diamondbacks are next. While the Diamondbacks are off to a hot start this season, the Marlins did beat the Diamondbacks in a series. It's only 3 games out there in Arizona. And then after that, it gets pretty easy. You got the Reds next weekend. You've got Nationals. You've got the Giants. You've got the Rockies. And if you want to look even further to the horizon, on the horizon, I should say, the A's and Royals are back-to-back series. So this is the stretch where the Marlins really need to get it together. And saw the tweet from Takes Were Made earlier this week about this upcoming stretch of the next 40 games prior to this Cubs series, and talking about record predictions. I didn't see a series win this weekend, but I think if the Marlins are going to play how they played at the beginning of the season, they should easily come out over 500. But Eli, you did have some different thoughts on that.
I was generally a little pessimistic about where the Marlins are headed right now. Not that they're going to totally fall apart, but that just because what a schedule may look like at this stage, it's so hard to tell like how good these teams will actually be by the time the Marlins actually play them. Teams change so much just from week to week, and especially from month to month, and all the time in between. I don't put too much weight on what the projected strength of schedule looks like. I think more so just has to do with the way that your talent is performing right now. As we saw this week, the Marlins' talent did not perform. Sandy dragged them he almost dragged them to a win in 9 innings. At the end of the day, he had to settle for dragging them into extra innings to avoid a 6th consecutive loss. The main thing holding them back is still the offense. The offense just is not significantly improved from last year the way we thought it would be. There are so many outs in this lineup, or so many guys where the best case scenario is you get a single from them, and it's just not culminating into many runs. They score 5 today. Let me double check to look at the past week. They had that 6-run game in the blowout loss to the Braves, when the Braves were just using the absolute lowest guys in their pen in order to get to that number. Aside from that, this was a very rare time for them to get to 5 runs, and it took them 14 innings and 5 automatic runners on second base in order to get to 5 runs today. It's still a really bad offense. Despite you have Luis Arraez's consistency, you know he's going to be on base almost 2 times on average every single game, and that should be a pretty solid base for your lineup. But everybody around him is either hot or cold, or in some cases haven't gotten hot in the first place. I'm going to do an individual podcast on Gene Segura pretty soon and how like upsetting and disappointing he has been considering his track record. Today he got his 1500th career hit. He's had such a great career, and you wouldn't know it by watching him play this year. I don't want to pick on him too much in this case, just as a blanket statement. This is still the ongoing concern and why I have a hard time seeing them put any sort of consistent winning stretch together unless they continue winning every single 1-run game the way that they have to this point. If you want to really drill down on this particular game, for somebody in Skip that has pushed all the right buttons or almost all the right buttons this season, I didn't like the way that he managed that 9th inning. I don't think this was a game where you necessarily force Sandy to finish it himself. It's not always that simple as riding Sandy until he gives up the lead or until the finish for win or lose. Like sometimes there's nuance to that. This being such a close game and the way that AJ Puck has pitched for most of the season, I thought the pretty clear move was to bring in Puck once Cody Bellinger came to the plate and bring lefty to match up against both him and I think the next lefty in the lineup right after Bellinger in that situation. It seems like an obvious lane for Puck to get the final 2 outs of the game, even though Sandy at that point hadn't allowed a run. And they are very fortunate. They were able to win this game. They were fortunate because the bullpen continues to perform very well in those extra innings, throwing up a couple of zeros when they had no margin for error in extras to like push it that far. For several reasons, you know, ultimately you'd like the players on the field to perform better to win that game in regulation. And if not, I felt that a move should have been made a couple batters earlier, understanding that this year is not the same as last year. All things considered, a pretty big takeaway from today is that Sandy was awesome three times through the lineup. What I had poked at recently is that he was so special last year because the way that he was dominant late in games, the way that he was early in games, and that held true today. He lost the game the fourth time through the lineup. It was such a rare circumstance where hitters got to see him a fourth time, and that's when finally there were a couple good swings against him, and really just one good swing in that Bellinger triple or double, and then whatever that was. Overall, this was a really exciting game to see Sandy look like his Cy Young self, to throw his fastball with as much velocity as we've seen this year, and more importantly, as much command as we've seen at any point this year. I don't think he walked a batter. Is that right? He faced 32 batters with no walks or hit by pitches. When Sandy
hits, no walks, I think was it.
Right. But I thought he was really terrific today, despite getting the no decision, despite leaving the mound in a sad state of affairs in that situation. That was a pretty big takeaway that he was great. The main story continues to be this offense. And I don't know exactly where you go from here. They've called up Peyton Burdick and let them give him some time to see if he can offer them anything. Cause in the small sample, they haven't seen much. They just brought Joey Wendell back today. Maybe we go more into that. They've had a couple recent additions, but I don't know if either of them moved the needle all that much either. So this continues to be the main thing to watch, is simply if their hitters get going, if anybody except for Arias can consistently give them something at the plate.
I would agree. And as Isaac had pointed out earlier, he's in here. VLC is kind of starting up one of his 2-week stretches where he's just like scorches the earth and has a bunch of multi-hit games and plays like a legit MLB outfielder. But he's also coming off like a week and a half stretch where he just shit himself, basically. So it's tough. I like what Soler's doing. I think the player I've actually been most disappointed with this season is Jazz Chisholm. And it's pretty sad. I was a little disappointed with Sandy, but I kind of knew he would fix it. But Jazz, I don't know what happened. I don't know if the offseason got to his head with the cover athlete and obviously being an all-star last year. But if some of this kind of just made him forget came from, that sort of thing. So I don't know. And the entire lineup's just been really miserable outside of Arias for the entire season. And tomorrow's Zach Gallen game, so I would just go ahead and chalk that up as a loss. So it's just getting it together for the next two Arizona games. This is going to be a really telling week. And the Reds have been able to play a good amount of small ball this year. And they're coming up this weekend, of course, with how wide Lone Depot Park is and how easy stuff can get down, as we've seen with Arias' success this year. While the Reds do suck, that could ultimately be a series loss, but there's just so much wrong with this team right now, and not a lot of answers, way more questions than potential answers, it seems.
Yeah. The bullpen, again, I reiterate that the bullpen has been a nice surprise. I need to continue spotlighting Huascar Brazoban as pitching now at this recently. I guess he's as now as good as anybody, as reliable as anybody in this bullpen. He has now a scoreless streak that dates back almost an entire month at this point. I did not foresee him throwing with as much control as he is throwing right now, where he's challenging hitters and he has such a nasty pitch mix, really three really nasty pitches that he can turn to get outs with. He was one of the several guys that really made a difference in this game to ensure that it got as long as it did for the offense to eventually pull through. I think overall, and that's big, because so few other options in this pen consistently miss bats the way that Brazoban does. This is the stuff that makes a difference in the close games. The reason why the team is slightly under 500 to this point is because there are a lot of not so close games where they get blown out pretty decisively. And at that point, the bullpen is not going to save you one way or another. I think in this first game coming up against the D-backs, it's Braxton Garrett starting. It's the ultimate look for redemption, coming off one of the more miserable starting pitching performances in Marlins team history last time against the Braves. That will be pretty big on him. Meanwhile, lurking all the way down in Pensacola, Yuri Perez again today with a terrific outing, going six innings, allowing, I think, only four base runners and nine strikeouts. Again, he's not an imminent replacement, but it's a combination of the offense and also the rest of the rotation kind of being up and down, Sandy included to this point. Like, they need to improve pretty significantly in one or both of those areas, the rotation consistency and the offense as a whole. Otherwise, you could see this slipping away. And it's a really big test against the D-backs. They've been a hot team as I look at it. I think they just blew another lead today. They've had a tough time against the Nationals. They barely won yesterday. I saw them that fall apart live. And now today they were ahead 7-3, and now they're trailing 9-8. And they need to rally late. But even so, they put up runs on the board. I think even more so than the Cubs at this current juncture. I think you really need to fear their offense putting up crooked numbers against just about anybody. It's a really deep lineup. So it's an interesting test. And as you said, if they get through this series, then the schedule looks a lot more appetizing. But you got to take it just one series at a time, because these teams, they can change very rapidly between how they're actually performing.
Yeah, I would agree. And with this series, so with the way the MLB schedule's been rolled out like the last few years or so, I don't know if the Marlins have had a series after Mother's Day against the D-backs since pre-COVID. And I feel like the Diamondbacks start hot every single year. And once again, this year, they have started out scorching hot. They had at least a share of the NL West lead to pretty much the entire first part of the season. I think they won opening day and have held at least a share of that spot since. So it's going to be another tough series with Gallen tomorrow. It almost seems at this point that you just have to hope you can win the next two. I don't know who they have pitching after that, but it's going to be tough. Look, we have Alex Carver here, Fish on the Farm, with his hand up. A lot of minor league stuff happened this weekend, so we'll get to him.
Hi, friends. How are you guys?
Good.
Fabulous.
Oh, great to hear. Well, Eli was talking earlier, and he didn't want to pick on this guy too much. But you guys know me as a transparent communicator, so I'm going to do it myself.
Go ahead. Yep.
This guy, I've been calling it out in the chat. I've called it out since the first week of the season. This guy, Gene Segura, stinks. Okay, he cannot play. He's absolutely cooked. Done. His career is over. Okay, he is the worst player in baseball by WRC Plus, and it's not even close. Okay, a 27 WRC Plus. The next guy in line is Jose Abreu at 45. Okay, so he's almost twice as worse as the next guy in line after him. He's pounding the ball into the ground with like a 62% ground ball rate. He is horrible. Okay, there is no reason that the Marlins should have given this guy a two-year deal based off what he's doing so far. They're going to regret it, and there's guys in the minor leagues, including Xavier Edwards, who I thought showed pretty well in center field. He can play third base, so can Charles LeBlanc. There are so many guys that you can point to that would definitely, even though they're not superstars, maybe, and it's definitely not in the case of LeBlanc, he's not a superstar, but he's a usable player. Edwards has a lot of potential, and he showed it. He has positional flexibility. They send him down because Gene Segura is blocking up third base. This guy is not good. This is a team that has scored, I think, still the second fewest runs in baseball. This guy plays at the bottom of the lineup. He has three hits with runners in scoring position. This guy is horrible. He does not belong on this team. And if they are serious about winning baseball games, this guy's got to go. Sorry.
You think we could go viral like that? The one guy with the White Sox rant. I mean, that was 7 minutes. That was 1 minute. But do you think we could do something similar with that? That was a beautiful rant.
Yes, it has potential. It has potential with him. He had a couple opportunities today to come up with. He had one hit, and to his credit, he had a pretty deep line drive that was for an out in maybe third or fourth time at bat. But aside from that. Defensively, there was a scary moment where he almost made an error bobbling a ball and just barely getting a force out. I think that was during one of the extra innings that could have ultimately cost him in that game. It really has been an all-around struggle for him. They mentioned a lot of times, both Skip himself and then on the broadcast today, they reiterated that he doesn't like taking games off. He loves being in the lineup every single day. And to this point, the Marlins have complied with his desire to be in the lineup almost every single day. And there really has not been much of a sign of turning the corner. There's a little bit of bad luck involved, of course. The fact that you make as much contact as he does and he gets so few hits, history says that will even out a little bit over time. Even so, there's just the ceiling does not appear to be particularly high because everything is on the ground. Everything is on the ground. And that the defensive conversion to third base hasn't gone quite as well as they thought, where the arm strength is there, but basically everything else is absent. The arm accuracy just the general movements, his hands, just the reliability of his hands to field balls cleanly. And statistically, as Carver touched on, the stats bear it out that he has been a sub replacement level and by a pretty big margin.
I mean, worst WRC plus in baseball. That's one of my favorite advanced stats. I feel like it's pretty telling because your average is just right at 100, but 27. It says 31 as of yesterday, but it went down to 27 today. He's been terrible, although they paid him a lot of money. It's early on. I'm not defending this. This is the way the Marlins operate. He has the penthouse suite on the road clause in his contract. It just doesn't seem like this is a guy they're going to let go this year. Unless they finally do get serious about winning games. I've mentioned it before. This is Kim's last year on her deal. She is kind of fighting for extension. Yeah, I think ultimately she'll probably just get like a one-year extension prove-it deal, but if she really wants to prove it, I feel like a big statement would be, hey, we're not going to allow losing right like this. We'll DFA him. What? And Segura is not going to have any game.
Right.
Two-year deal. They're paying him millions. No one's going to take him, so if he gets off this roster, DFAing will be the only option.
Right. I just want to mention, in the same vein as Segura, one of their other substantial free agent signings this past offseason has been derailed before even giving them much of anything on the field. That's Johnny Cueto, who has a one-year, $8.5 million deal. He made his first rehab appearance with AAA yesterday in what was supposed to be a relatively quick rehab assignment. He was mostly stretched out. I think the idea was for him to go about five innings yesterday. He got absolutely rocked by, I think it was the Cardinals AAA affiliate. He allowed four home runs in less than three innings. He didn't go past the third inning because he hurt himself trying to cover first base. He sprained his ankle, as Skip confirmed today pregame, and that is going to be some sort of setback. They don't think he can make his next scheduled start in Jacksonville. They'll have to diagnose the severity of the ankle sprain. Remember, he's originally on the IL for a biceps issue. The one time we saw him in the majors before getting hurt, he was that small sample was very discouraging as well. And he's the highest paid starting pitcher on the roster. He's getting more so than even Sandy. He was coming off a pretty decent year, but you just never know when that cliff is going to come for a 37-year-old player and one who had some shaky durability history even prior to this, of course. That's just, it's baffling. Like, whenever this team tries to spend money and actually spending money competing against other teams, the San Diego Padres were one of the teams that wanted Johnny Cueto. It wasn't only the Marlins or other teams that saw him as a back end starting pitching type. And he has fallen well short of that just because he's just not particularly well conditioned at this stage of his career. Maybe you don't know exactly what goes into it, but they've increased payroll. They're spending more money this year than they have any other year of Bruce Sherman's tenure. But all these contracts, those two new ones, and of course, you know, the big one, Avi Garcia, who's on the IL with no clear timeline to return. Whenever they try to spend money, the vast majority of the time, it's just not helping whatsoever.
Yeah, I will apologize. I was an advocate for Johnny Cueto, but last year was a really good season for all things considered. I thought they got him for decent value, but oh well. I want to play a quick little game. I think there's a clear-cut answer, but I want to ask the question because it's funny. Who pitches for the Marlins next? Johnny Cueto, Yuri Perez, or Sixto Sanchez?
Yuri.
I thought that was the answer, but I giggled thinking of those three groups together.
It's a really close one. It is, because I fully expect the way that Yuri's performing, it seems pretty clear he's going to be up this year. With Cueto, I mean, it's not like his ankle fell off. I don't think he fractured it. So I don't know if this is like a long-term setback for him. I'm still going to go Cueto. I'm not going to promise that he'll pitch well, but I think he makes it back to the majors right before Yuri does.
Do we see any of them in May? I would say no.
Yeah, I would also lean no on both of them. I'm thinking June for Yuri.
That seems like a good target date. My original target coming into the season was Memorial Day, and a lot of people told me that was too soon, but I think we could see him before maybe like Father's Day. I don't know. I think we definitely see him before the All-Star break, at least the way things are going.
The only thing
he's performing.
The only thing with Perez is that, yeah, he went sixth today, and as Eli said, he was fantastic again, but they don't let him go very far over 80 pitches. Like, it's 79, 80, 82, 84, 85. They just are being very, very cautious with how many pitches they let him throw in a single start. Like, if he's at 80 pitches, he's out. He's done. Like, they're taking him out. No matter, it could be the fourth inning or the sixth, they're going to take him out. So they need to get him off. Like, they need to show the confidence in him that, hey, this kid's ready to be pushed all the way and fully stretch him out to, like, the 100-pitch mark for you to really say, okay, yeah, this kid can come up and contribute to a Major League Baseball team. So that's got to happen. And I think it's long overdue that is happening. I understand that they're being careful with a 20-year-old kid. But, man, and they're star prospect, and obviously a guy they have a lot of hopes for, which is understandable. But you got to push him at some point. So I hope to see it today. It didn't happen. It's the main question. Like, when are they going to let this guy go more than 80 pitches? And it hasn't happened a lot.
Yeah, agreed. And I forget who we told this yesterday. It was someone on our fantasy baseball league. It may have been Duke Johnson, but to not get too excited when Yuri comes up, just because it's going to be in a limited capacity based off what Alex just said. They don't really let him go that long. You got to be careful with a 20-year-old kid has injury problems that probably could put some weight on. You got to be careful, especially because I don't want to say they're rushing him up, but a little more time for him to cook, to get cooked down in the minors, I guess if you want to call it that. It would make sense, but you're entering desperation time. This is the last crown jewel that's in the Marlins farm system that was perceived as one of the best farm systems of baseball for so long. Kind of seems like a joke now. No offense to the guys Alex covers, but it's just not as good as it once was. And Yuri seems like the last true guy that the Marlins have. And a lot of these prospects haven't panned out. Almost all of them haven't panned out. Yuri just seems to be the last guy at this point.
Hey, don't disrespect Yidi like that.
I do like Yidi. I do. But I don't think his ceiling is nearly that high. Plus, just what's it called?
He'll be I think there's no chance that he's not a top 100 prospect by the end of the year.
I agree with you there. What was the word I'm trying to say? He's just not like a home run prospect. Like, he's got a low or higher floor and a lower ceiling. I feel like I haven't evaluated him too much.
I feel like it's the opposite.
What do you think is the ceiling? Do you think it's the opposite, really?
Yeah, I feel like it's a higher ceiling and not, not
nearly as good as evaluating minor league guys as you are. I mean, that's Alex Carver's living.
No, yeah, I would think it's a very, very, very high ceiling. Just, it could also go extremely low floor.
He's a good baseball player. He's easily the best position player that they have in the farm system. But you look at all the other position players that have come through, who's been the best out of all of them? Yeah. I don't even have an answer. Guys have come up through the system. He's off to a good start in Oakland. Isaac's got some feelings.
Oh, man.
To be fair, one of those series was against the Royals. The Royals are terrible.
He overed off Brady Singer, who's literally been the worst pitcher in baseball this year.
He's been bad. I need to see a couple more weeks of Bledsoe. But when guys come up for the first time in a minute from AAA, after the Aristides Aquino month back in 2019, I've just learned to wait for guys to kind of just get settled in a little bit. That guy had one of the best months of baseball history, and he's in like the AAA version of Japanese baseball right now, 3 years later. So just got to be a little bit careful about
Bledsoe. Bledsoe homered off, I think it was Joe Musgrove last year, and still, I just, I'm not, even with his home runs, I'm not very impressed. You know, they're just wall scrapers that, you know, he really has to crank the shit out of it to get any real power. I don't know. I'm not a huge fan of the player, but I wish him the best.
I wanted him to be good so bad. I thought he could be good, but he just wasn't. And the fact that that might be a legitimate answer, that the best hitter that's actually come up through the Marlins system during this era, I think who else? Nick Fortes?
Yeah, I was going to say Nick Fortes.
Nick Fortes?
Brian Anderson did it.
He didn't come up through this era.
You're talking about
Jeter and Kim and all that? I guess that's
what you're talking about. Yeah, debuting post 5 years.
Yeah. Come up during like the Gary Dembo and like the DJ era.
Like homegrown, or you even mean like trade acquisitions?
Guys who spent these 4 or 5 months in the system, give or take.
I guess you go Jazz. No, Jazz, Sanchi. I guess
who else? Jazz and Sanchez have been the only like okay at least players. It's a pretty depressing list.
Yeah, what the hell, Eli? Well,
I'm trying to think. DLC didn't even spend like a day.
He got sent down a couple times when he got traded.
He's been sent down a couple, yeah. But when he got traded from Houston, he went straight from Corpus Christi. Where I forget where Houston's AAA team is. He went straight from there to Miami. But I mean, he's been a decent MLB player. I'm trying to think who else. It's just very, very depressing. Yeah, I don't have an answer, but I think that tells you just how bad it has been and why it's okay to not really have hope for what they've got. And Jose Salas was in that. I was a big Salas guy, but he's been terrible this year. He's been horrific at the plate. Last we checked, like maybe a couple weeks ago, he was batting way below the Mendoza line at single A or high A ball. I have hope for Yiddy, but
for him, like I would agree with Isaac. Like I think it's higher floor for Cafe. I think it's a lower floor, higher ceiling. I think it's higher ceiling for Cafe. Yeah, he's a ceiling player because he shows a lot of power, but he's still such a lanky kid. So you got to see how he fully grows into the frame, of course, right? And then you got to see where he winds up defensively because I think he's going to wind up at third base. So he's probably going to wind up at a power position. I've said he's going to wind up at the third baseman for a while. So I think he's going to be a third baseman. He's going to need to let the power permeate. And then he's also going to need to continue to show that he can grow into the frame. So it's a higher floor player and a higher ceiling player and a lower floor player for me. But yeah, you're right, Grant, that this is the best offensive talent that the Marlins have. His swing is so good. Like his swing is very, very smooth. He's pretty patient at the plate, at least against these single-A advanced guys that he's facing. And he's still one of the youngest players in single-A advanced right now, which is impressive. So, yeah, I like this kid, man. I think he's good. But I would go higher ceiling over floor for sure.
All right. I think we spent enough time on that. We want to get to the fan park, because I'm sure there's actually a decent amount of listeners given that the Panthers are playing right now. So I'm sure we'll have lots of questions, but first, before we do that, actually, two things. Noah has something he wants to say.
First off, you can put my tweet up. I have made it to the location that I wanted to cameo from. It is the Bean in downtown Chicago at Millennium Park. It is quite cold, but it's awesome, and there's a lot of people here.
What is the temperature there? Because I know for my...
It's like 65.
Cold is like, yeah.
It's like 65.
I'd be wearing a hoodie and shorts, 65. Ew. That used to be shorts, t-shirt weather. I mean, Ohio. I do get the wind. The wind definitely plays a factor. I've never been to Chicago, but I have a buddy who goes to school there. Wind's no joke.
I don't know if you guys want to talk about Craig's tweet. When he said that this was the last start he thinks that Yuri would make at Pensacola. I assume he means he'd go to AAA. I don't know if you guys mentioned that already.
I did see that, and I know that Craig has been he's very bullish on Yuri, even relative to the rest of us and his timeline for coming up. It is an interesting, with just about every other prospect in recent memory, with COVID things like not included, like basically every other Marlins prospect has gone to AAA before skipping up to the majors, especially if they're going to be a starting caliber player. The only exceptions were some of the guys that didn't have to play at AAA because there was no minor league season in 2020. Just about everybody else made that stop for a little bit. I do think there is some value in him going to a more pitcher, well, more hitter friendly league, I should say, compared to the Southern League where he is right now, due to several different circumstances. Even if the prospect talents isn't quite the same at the International League as it is where he is right now, the run scoring environment is a little bit more challenging. And I imagine that the team would also like to see him perform there for a little bit before jolting him up to the big leagues. As much as they want to win in the majors right now, as shaky as the rotation depth is right now, Brian Hoeing is their number five quote starter, and yet they didn't have enough confidence to actually start him against the Cubs. They just limited him to three innings as a long man in what was just a glorified bullpen game. And we know that behind him, the options are not appealing in terms of the conventional AAA guys. So I understand why there is a temptation to like bring him all the way up. Also knowing that he's never come close to pitching a full season, his innings as a whole are being monitored, as Carver mentions. Like, he's not going to, even if you bring him up right now, he's not going to make 25 starts in the big leagues the rest of the year. He doesn't have, they're not going to give him all those innings. They need to be careful with his long-term outlook.
It would be a Jose situation where they cut him off. They say, okay, this is your last.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, in the organization, as much as Jose succeeded, Jose Fernandez, of course, we're talking about, you know, that was a terrible idea. That was terrible. That was terrible that they brought him up at 20 years old and plugged him into big league rotation because they had nobody that was on the same level, that they had to rush him in that particular way instead of doing something that was better for his actual long-term well-being. But they are in a tough spot. No doubt they're in a tough spot. As we underscored early on, Grant, Kim is in the last year of her deal. And like I think she wants to show that they have this really special pitcher coming up. That being said, I would predict that he pitches at AAA before coming up to the majors. And as long as he performs the same way at AAA that he has at AA, then you could see him in the big leagues not too long after. But I'd like to see him take that intermediate step.
When you mentioned Jose, I remember that they did call him up because out of necessity, and that was so not the right thing to do. But they were so careful with him. They did not let him go over 80 pitches or his first, like, you know, like 10 starts or something. They were so careful. And even when you're extremely careful with a player, that, you know, it doesn't guarantee health. You know, you got Tommy John surgery.
He still missed pretty much two seasons.
So, you know, like what they're doing with Yuri, you know, it's more likely than not that he's going to need to. Every pitcher, I think it's a third of every major league pitcher needs Tommy John at some point. So you might as well that's the way I would do it. I would just play him until, you know, he inevitably needs some sort of arm surgery. It's sad, but it's the reality.
I don't know if I necessarily agree with that. He's going to get injured. Every pitcher gets injured, but it's a 1 in 3 chance of needing Tommy John. I would still be careful because him and Jose are two different pitchers in terms of build. Jose was a little bit bigger.
Yeah, they are different. A little bit more conditioning. Bigger.
Yuri's like 6'7". He probably weighs as much as I do. 6'8". He probably weighs as much as the average weight between Isaac and I, which is maybe like 135 pounds at most. But he weighs more than that, we know, obviously. But the point is that there are two different guys build-wise. And when 6'0 was coming up, as much as I love him, I saw the same problem. I saw the same risk at hand. Like, this guy is just not conditioned. He's not big. He doesn't really take care of himself, as we've seen the last few years. And people at the time are kind of like, well, that's not really a fair statement, but, you know, that's kind of where we're at now. And we still haven't seen 6'0 since we're all wearing masks and sitting on our couch and
yeah,
they played an empty baseball
season. I just want to note again that one reason why, like, this rushing Yuri now feels a little bit more like a possibility is because of the Johnny Cueto setback. Cueto was not supposed to be that far away from rejoining their rotation, and they were, given his track record, they were going to give him a shot to perform as their starter and give him a pretty long leash to prove himself. But that is yet another piece of their rotation depth chart that is out of commission. So with him out, with even Daniel Castano on the injured list, with the little glimpses that we've seen of what, Jeff Lindgren and who are the other mop-up guys that have called up? I mean, well, George
Smeltzer,
Smeltzer, of course. Smeltzer
had a good start, though, outside of that Cleveland game.
He's a really uninspiring pick right there. So they didn't have a ton of 2023 ready rotation depth entering this year, and that they've had bad injury luck. They've just had, a lot of teams have pitcher injuries. You look around the sport and that's not unusual, but it's unfortunate that they've been bunched together with Castano and Smeltzer and Cueto and Trevor Rogers. It goes on and on. It's been a tough break, and that's why I put you in that position where you're still close enough where if you get, at the very least, I think it's reasonable to think that Yuri could be better than the typical back end starter, even as a 20-year-old, but you never know for sure. And ultimately, I don't think it's worth it to do anything reckless with him, just understanding how much value he can give to your team for the next 5 years, the next 10 years, if things are handled like a little bit more traditionally.
Agreed. All right. Well, with that being said, I'm sure now that we've kind of dampened the area expectations, you guys have lots of questions. But first, before we do that, consider becoming a super subscriber, a super follower, as I like to call it. It's what it was called. It's what it's always been called to me. But we got some of the benefits here, and it's just for $3 a month. $3. It's the lowest price we could make it. You got all sorts of potential benefits with it. It is definitely worth the price. First off, we always mentioned it before we get to the fan part here, because you get first priority to speak in these spaces. You can compete in fantasy sports leagues with us. We have a super subscriber fantasy baseball league. The winner there gets our field level Marlins tickets at some point, whether that be for the 2023 postseason or 2024 season. All access to the gift database that we've got. We added a couple new ones today with that Jesus Sanchez one. Pretty funny. You can make serious predictions with us. We do serious predictions for every single series, and we have a couple of super subscribers in the top five right now. It's actually mostly super subscribers. They get to compete for the full season. I feel like I'm missing something else. Just constant giveaways. Access to the game notes that the Marlins PR team releases before games. That stuff is loaded. I hadn't used them until I covered the Cleveland series. And that thing is the Marlins Bible. It has everything you could need to possibly know heading into a series. If you're a big stat nerd, that thing's got everything. So all that being said, it's just $3 a month. Go straight to us. Highly consider it. It is 100% worth it. We're going to bring in Romeo right now, who has been probably our longest tenured super subscriber to this point. Of course, anyone can request to talk in these spaces. We will answer all and any questions from Marlins fans. And, of course, Romeo, he pays the $3, so he gets to go first. So, Romeo, how are we doing tonight? What's your question?
Hey, how's it going? No more of much of a question. I feel like I come up here and ask, statements.
you had a good one the last time we did this, though. It's been, we took a week off. I had some final school stuff to do, but you pointed out a Panamanian pitcher to us that would be a good option to take a look at. In the future, that was a really good one. I look at some of those guys' numbers. It was a good option.
Speaking of the devil, today he didn't. I think he played. I added Eli. I said he was our boy because I was joking around with him. And I believe he threw an inning against the Mets and it did not allow a hit.
Yeah, this being Justin Lawrence, right?
Yeah, Justin Lawrence. He went an inning, no hits, no walks, 1K.
Good stuff. Good stuff. This is Romeo's guy. If he ever becomes a shutdown closer, yeah. Romeo found him.
Yeah, it's hard to pitch in Coors, and for him to have a 1 ERA, and I feel like it's a good someone to look at.
The schedule coming up, so got it. Might have to play against him in Coors, nonetheless.
Yeah. I was gonna say, someone asked what's wrong with Jazz. Is that question I think I heard?
No one asked that, but I kind of presented that at the beginning of the show. Is I'm really disappointed with them. Obviously, a great, funny guy, a cool player to have on a team, but he's been terrible at the plate this year, nonetheless.
outside.
I think what he's doing this year, maybe it gets a little bit worse, but that's the player that he is. You know, he hasn't exactly been anything much better than what he's doing now. Obviously, the strikeouts are a little bit inflated, but he's not, you know, a significantly better version of this, I don't think.
There is a significant difference between how he's hitting this year and how he was hitting last year. And
like I said, worse than what he, I think last year was maybe sort of the best he's going to be, and this year's a little bit worse than what he's going to be.
I don't know if he's peaking. I think that if he peaked last year, I thought that that was a good stepping stone for last year. Obviously, he set the bar pretty high for himself in just a 60-game sample size, but you look at the numbers that the Marlins had with and without him, they were a road team offensively last year with him for those 60 games, and for the final 102, they were the worst offensive team in the league.
Yeah, I understand. I'm talking about the individual player. This is someone that struck out 42% of the time at Double-A. He's good. He's a good player. He's a great speed-power combination, which is very rare, and it's dope, and he does play.
Since before coronavirus existed.
Right, I'm just saying, like, this is a player that, you know, he's always going to strike out a lot, so I think it's just always going to be a limited offensive profile.
Right. Yeah, so. Well, what stuns me is just the lack of slugging, because the home run rate is fine, as Peter Pratt will remind us. He's within reach of maybe a 40-40 pace. At least he's going to hit his fair share of home runs. But the fact that his overall slugging is even under 400, that I didn't even foresee that being a possibility for him this year. He's such a talented power hitter, and the absence of doubles in his entire game. He has two doubles in 34 games. That's not usually a stat that people look at, but it's a sign of an incomplete hitter. A guy that when he's not homering, he's basically giving them nothing offensively. And he showed last year and even the year before that he should be more well-rounded than that. It has been tough. You point to the struggles against lefties, but the fact that he's not dominating righties is a disappointment. The bar was set pretty high, and I don't think it was unreasonable to think that he would be an above average offensive player, due largely to what he could do as a slugger. And that has not shown up. He's been a good base runner when he's been on base. He just has not been on base very much at all. And I think we've all been somewhat pleasantly surprised by how he's looked in center field, all things considered. It's just ultimately the most important thing was going to be his bat. And that was the one thing that maybe too many people took for granted, and maybe myself included, that I thought the baseline for him as a hitter was a lot higher than this. And that it is holding them back. Him as much as almost, I pinpointed Gene Segura. I think he's the one that has fallen the farthest short of expectations as a hitter, going from a guy that himself should be a league average hitter into being one of the worst in the big leagues. But Jazz is in that conversation where you look at what could have reasonably been anticipated from him and what he's giving you. There's a pretty big discrepancy.
Yeah, that was well said.
I think we got spoiled last year in the beginning of the year because he started the year slugging like a maniac. His slugging percentage was almost at 600 for a certain point of the I think it was like all of April. It was like mid 500s. So I think we got a little spoiled thinking that he was going to repeat that to begin this year too.
The difference there is like, yeah, Jazz has also been disappointing, but this is a younger, of course, a much younger player. He's also putting the ball in the air. He's making at least some contact. And you know that this guy has too much talent to not turn it around. Whereas Gene Segura has nothing left. The guy's hapless, horrible.
He could take an Alex Carver insult.
Yeah, we were just talking about Jazz and how this guy's comparison.
No, because you guys are talking about underperformers. I'm not comparing the two players.
Bring up Segura. He did.
You know that Jazz is going to regret, whereas with Segura, you know the guy's pretty much not going to. He's pretty bad.
I get depressed when I see Segura come up with a runner on first base.
He strikes out less than Jazz does.
But he gets into more double plays.
Ball in the play, but that dude just cannot hit with a runner on. He sees a runner on first and says, okay, I'm going to hit this ball to the shortstop.
Yeah. Or the third baseman.
That ball is not leaving the infield.
Yeah. Today he did it, but that's because they stole and his walk-off was a double play. Both of his runs that he scored on that Friday were both going to be double plays. He's having a problem. His swing is just cutting straight down, and he's just hitting everything hard on the ground. Riley stole some hits from him, I'm not going to lie. So I'll give him his props. right? Those that this last week I was where I was at the game, obviously, and then he was hitting the ball hard. The ball's coming off his bat hard. It's just to a glove, and it's not. It's just yeah. It's not enough. He's producing. He's not producing enough. But you could tell that the swing is there. His swing is bad. Like the power is there. Like he's hitting the ball hard. He's just hitting it to gloves.
We did point out constantly earlier. Someone did. It may have been Eli that his swing stance is not nearly as wide now. He's kind of straightened it up a little bit more. I don't know what that's all about.
He always finds a way to hit the floor every time as well.
Yeah, I've seen subtle mechanical differences. There really is no smoking gun. It is just a combination of just degradation in his performance and a little bit of bad luck, or you know, a substantial amount of bad luck that overall is bringing him down, unfortunately. And then when you combine that with the way that he's playing third base, which is not good, yeah, it gives you it's where you're at with this. I think Joey Wendell is coming back at the right time, where I think it's pretty natural decision to have days where Birdie and Wendell are in the lineup and Segura is not. I don't know exactly how they split it up. I don't think they're going to immediately make Segura the small side of a platoon and only start him against lefties. I think it's going to be a more gradual process than that. But he has done absolutely nothing to justify playing every day to this point in the season. If he's going to reclaim that role at this point, I think he absolutely has to perform first before they do that, given now that they have a little bit more proven depth on their roster.
I don't know how you can say he's consistently hitting the ball hard. He literally has an 88 mile per hour average exit velocity, which is terrible. Like, there's no excuse for this guy. There literally is nothing that this guy does that you can point to and say, okay, he does that good. 63% ground ball rate, 88 mile per hour average exit velocity. He's terrible. It was a bad signing. It's a bad contract. They're going to be stuck with it, most likely. This guy is bad, and it's very depressing.
There was a solid nine, maybe seven-game stretch where he was getting insanely unlucky. He was hitting the ball somewhat, you know, relatively hard. But since then, it's been a while ago. That has all just disappeared. It's never been as bad as it is right now, in my opinion, for Segura.
Yeah, this is probably the worst stretch of his career, which is crazy to say with how accomplished of a career he's had. But it's a Miami Marlins effect, I guess, where good hitters just come to die. But Soler has gotten it together pretty well. I've been really happy with what we've seen from Soler so far. I mean, he does strike out a lot, but he's come up in good moments. He's the only player on the team that could seemingly hit a home run at this rate. Since the occasional Garrett Cooper one, but he's made his bi-monthly IL appearance, so there's that.
All right, I remember my question. I did forget.
Okay, you had a question. All right. Anyone who wants to request and has a question, go ahead, because we don't have anyone waiting. I don't want the show to get cut short here.
I do, like, think of questions, and then you guys speak, and then I forget. So my question was, Max Meyer started throwing programs. Do we see him at all this year?
No.
Call at this point.
No, it's not a tough call. We're not going to see him this year. Bender has a slightly better chance of making it back for the end of this year. But with Max, they're going to be pretty cautious with that. And it just takes extra time to stretch out as a starter in addition to getting healthy from that. So don't look for him as a possibility. I think Jake Eater is a little bit closer to getting back on a mound. And
didn't he have a setback? Alex will know this answer.
Well, he had a big setback in spring when he like broke his foot, but he's coming back from that as well. And the target is to have him pitching in minor league games next month. If he is the same pitcher he was before his injuries, plural, before Tommy John, then he's somebody that I think you could expect to fortify the pitching staff at the very end of the year.
Gotcha.
I can't believe he broke his foot. That's so crust for the team, for the organization.
Apparently, it was like off the field too. Like it wasn't even like something he did while playing. Like yeah. I don't know the full. Like the report that we got was like it was a freak accident off the field.
No, they're being very shady about it.
They're not saying anything about. Like I tried to ask about it too. Like they're not saying anything either. So something happened there. I don't know what, but something happened there.
That's really weird, but I wouldn't really put that behind them. But Yeah, good question. I thought that I wasn't going to straight up say no, but Eli's going to straight up say no. Yeah, we're not seeing him. I kind of had the hunch when it happened that we wouldn't see him until 2024, but just trying to give a little bit of hope.
He's ready for spring training in 2024.
Yeah, he'll be there for that. I'm excited for him. Hopefully he can come back strong. Didn't get to see much of him. And of course, the one full start he made, he got shellacked.
They left him out the game.
Even before the injury, I thought he should just go to the bullpen right away. But now, even after the injury,
he would be a good bullpen pitcher.
Before the injury, he was better than Max Meyer before the injury, and they both got challenged in Double A, and he was better than Max Meyer.
Wait, so, what? We're talking about Max Meyer.
Oh, yeah. I thought you were talking about Eater. Sorry, my bad. I thought you were talking about Eater.
No,
my bad.
No, Eater, are you kidding me? I would never put him in the bullpen. Max Meyer.
Okay, I thought you were talking about Eater.
Meyer.
Yeah, Meyer. Isaac mentioned this before before he got hurt. Isaac mentioned that he would just put him in the pen. I like that they gave him a chance to still succeed as a starter, because I think he could have done it. You're going to have to see how he comes back. He's not going to be back for a while. You got to see how he comes back after this. It's not impossible that he could rebound and still be like a back-end starter, but it may be a bullpen ceiling or future for him. But I still think he has the potential to start because the slider is so good. Fastball's still pretty good. Changeup is developing. So I think he's good enough to still be a starter. After the injury, it's going to be tough. We'll see.
We'll be the first ever person to wear a bullpen pitchers on the back of their shirt. I wore my Max Meyer jersey today, actually. It felt nice.
I've seen screenshots of people ordering Brazelbon jerseys recently, so
yeah, that's a sick jersey.
I actually think they'll lose. Yeah. That is a cool jersey, though. There was so much hype around that start, and man, he just got blown up. That was the game where I really felt like the season was about to go to shambles.
Well, he didn't get slacked, you know. He gave up a couple homers, and that was it. It wasn't that.
He gave up two.
It felt like the sky was falling after that.
After
the Reese Hoskins home run, it was made 3-0, I think that's what the score was. He should have got taken out and not allowed a home run to JT, and then which made it 6, which made it – it just looked worse. Because he came back against the Pirates, and before he hurt his arm, he was actually looking pretty good too. So, yeah.
One inning against the Pirates that game, or did he get through two? Or was it in the second?
It was in the first inning. It was his first inning.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
He didn't finish the inning.
Completed the inning or not?
It was made at bat with P. Brian Hayes. I'll never forget that. I was just finished buttoning on my jersey. It was the saddest thing. I had just finished buttoning it up, and then all I hear is Paul Cerullo say, "The trainers are coming out to look at Max." I was like, "Bro, there's no way. There's no way. This is sad."
I was in the keys with Bella when that happened. I was like, "Oh man, that sucks."
I got the credit for reporting his Tommy John on MLB Reddit. That's my claim to fame right now. To this day.
You didn't beat Kevin, though.
Kevin had it first, I think.
Technically. Craig told him the day before. Everyone knew he was going to need Tommy John. Like, Jordan McPherson literally had an article prepared. Cena saw it coming. I kind of saw it coming. I just didn't know it was confirmed. When I got told, I didn't know that was what I was being told. It's kind of like a holy shit, but you kind of expect it when it happens. Like, you don't get pulled for those kinds of injuries and have it not be something that's going to keep you out long term, the way it happened. But hopefully he can recover. Again, anyone who has a question, go ahead and request.
Carver. Carver, are all of Nassim Nunez's career home runs to the opposite field?
I think so. I think they actually are. This is crazy. I mean, I put it on Twitter today. Like, I talked to this guy, and I think a bunch of us talked to him, but I talked to him in spring training. Like, and he's like, "Yeah, man, I think I've always been strong, even though I'm a small guy, and, you know, hopefully plan on showing it." Dude has 3 home runs, which is, like, one more than his career total coming into the year. So,
are all 5 opposite field? All 5 of them?
All of the home runs I remember seeing him hit were opposite field. So, yeah, most of them, if not all of them, were up.
You could make a compilation of that for Twitter. I feel like some people would get a kick out of that.
Yeah, crazy. But I'm encouraged by what we see from that guy. Even though you guys laugh at me for being high on him, I like that guy.
I don't laugh at him. I like the pick when they drafted him. Of course, he kind of got off to a slower start in his career, but Outside of Yidi, I think he might be the only other hitter I even have somewhat hope for. Position player, I should say.
He's got a 400 OBP in Double A as still relatively young for that level. It is really good. It's a really good story. More walks than strikeouts to this point so far this season. It was probably the play that surpassed my expectations most last year, watching him play every day between Beloit and Pensacola. I think he's a legit prospect, and the power is like the main weakness that he had. And even so, there's still some questions about the general hitting ability of him. He's going to draw his walks. He's going to steal seconds automatically on anybody, especially with the bigger bases. And so the question is the general hitting ability. He has no doubles this year in 27 games. He has the occasional power to go deep, but is he going to be able to find enough total hits in enough of those matchups overall to be a starting caliber player? I don't think there's much doubt that he's going to be a big leaguer in some role, but whether he's going to be a starter, that's still obviously a pretty significant question.
Let me repose this question real quick. This one might trigger Isaac a little bit. Who do you guys think will have a better major league career, Nassim Nunez or Jacob Amaya?
That's a good question. That's a good question.
100% it's Nunez.
That's a very good. Okay, relax, Carver. Only 100%. Like, relax. But
comparison-wise, they kind of compare similarly just a bit. Although, of course, getting on
their glove for shortstop that don't really profile as starting shortstops, but I don't know. It's a very good question.
Not Nassim's glove is a shortstop. A starting shortstop, Isaac. He has the best defense.
Okay, but he's not going to be a starting shortstop when you're hitting, you know.
Right, but it's not because of his glove.
I'm not saying it's because of his glove. Saying both of them, because of their bats, will not be starting shortstop.
Okay. I mean, honestly, it's not a horrible question. I would say it's Nassim because I think his defense is even better than Amaya's. It's tough to say that it's, you know, that Amaya's not good. That's not to say that Amaya's not good on defense, but Nunez is better. He's just elite on defense, for sure, 100%.
I'm intrigued to hear Eli's answer on this.
Yeah, speed is way better for Nunez. Like Eli said, he's going to steal second base every time. He's 14 steals and no caught stealing so far this year.
You can steal first base, you know that, right?
Right, but you can get on via walk, which he's done via his 400.
Okay, you think he's going to be walking at the same rate in the major leagues? Not even close, dude.
No.
To be fair, I asked the same question about Nassim when he was putting up that crazy walk rate way back in low A. I was saying, is he going to continue this in high A? And then he continued it in high A. And was like, is he going to continue it in Double A? And it was high last year in Double A, and now it's even like freakishly high this year. I don't know what it is because he's a small guy. He's 5'9", but I think I don't think he's smaller than that. For whatever reason, nobody can find the strike zone against him, and he is able to spoil enough pitches. Like the strikeout rate has come down quite a bit from where it was early on, even last year, and he's fouling off pitches that he was whiffing at earlier in his career. It's interesting. I would lean very slightly towards Nassim in that question between Nassim and Amaya, but it's extremely close.
And the thing is, the last thing I'll say, so that I don't go on forever about the same player, which I could, but I won't. The last thing I'll say is that he's not getting lucky. He has a .296 BABIP, so he's not getting lucky. I think, like Eli said, the fact that he doesn't have as many doubles, a lot of his doubles in previous years were hustle doubles, like balls that just fell in front of people or blue pits, that he was just kind of legging out into doubles. This year, he's hitting the ball harder. He's hitting the ball way harder, as you can see, with 3 home runs, and they're not just lucky hits. They're hits that are legitimate hits, which is a good step for this player to take. I like this player, man. I think he's good. I think he could be a starting shortstop for sure.
Yeah,
yeah.
Mr. Kevin's here.
Oh. I have a question. So would we see him in September?
Well, they have to put him on the 40-man after the season anyway. Carver always loves that subject. You're going to put him on the 40-man anyway. Why don't you just call him up? It's a possibility right now. We know that shortstop is a huge question mark for this team. They need Wendell is going to be a pending free agent after this year as well. So even if Wendell plays well, they have questions about whether he's going to be on the team or not, then that makes it even more pertinent to like see what Nassim would look like down the stretch. So it's a possibility. I think Amaya has a better chance. He's certainly ahead in line because he's already on the 40-man roster and he's already been playing at AAA. So I think Amaya is still ahead of him on in that order of operations. As long as Amaya gradually gets, and he has been playing better than he was at the very start of the year, I think Amaya makes it up first. And I would lean towards Nassim not playing in the majors this year just because of that, because of the other infielders they already have at AAA. But it is a possibility. Yeah.
And there's no way that they would go into spring training 2024 with the intention of giving him a shot to compete for the starting shortstop opening day 2024 role, right? Because they really will go into next year with no shortstop option, unless you want to count Birdie and, you know. Yeah, Birdie, not Groshans. That's it, actually, Birdie.
Exactly. Yeah, well, because it's so wide open, I have no idea what they're going to do next year. We thought this past offseason that surely they're going to do something to shore up shortstop, or at least they're going to hold on to Miggy Rowe, and they didn't do that. So it is. I have no clue what they're thinking at that position.
Yeah, that's scary. Maybe Yidi will be like off by then.
Navi's here. He's got a question. What do we got?
Okay. Can you guys hear me?
Mm-hmm.
Perfect. This is going to be a hard question to answer because it's not in the box score. You guys are going to have to, like, I'm going to trust you guys because they're watching the actual minor league games. But I was just reading a tweet, skimming the Baseball America article on the ABS, the RoboWumps, how it was being expanded in AAA. It was being tested in, the Florida Coast League, the Low A League last year. So my question is, if you guys can recall, which players have been either affected by the RoboWump? Either they have a good eye that they get calls, like they ask for a challenge and the call gets overturned, like a strike is correctly called to a ball, or maybe a pitcher. I don't really know the logistics of how that works. I think the pitcher can request, like, hey, that what you called was a ball was actually a strike. Please review that. So if you guys are watching those games and you recall, like, which players have a good eye for that?
So,
because it's gonna be coming in the next few years, so we want to get ahead of that, right?
So I was able to see it last year when I went up to Jupiter, and I couldn't recall exactly which players requested in this, and that was a year ago. But I know that I think it's the batter, the catcher, and the pitcher that could all request. And maybe the managers too, I believe. But it works well from what I saw, and it was really good. That's what I can tell you. Carver probably has a better answer since he goes to Jupiter more often during that season. But from what I've seen and what I saw, it's good. I mean, I have no real complaints. I saw it today, actually, during the Jupiter game, the first one where it was a Jupiter batter. I think it was Luttrell who it was a strike, and it ended up being a ball, and it worked out for him. So that's probably the best example I can give you. But, I mean, it's something that I'm not closely looking at, you know.
I went to Jupiter last year, and that's what I asked because I recall seeing it there. And I remember, oh, that was quick. It took like 7 seconds for like the call to get like looked at, and the speaker system to say the call was overturned to be a strike or whatever. I just can't remember like a player that consistently like asked for the challenge and like he was right about like the call being in their favor. So if Carver know that, because I assume they're watching the minor league TV games or they're attending the games, if you guys know that answer, let me know.
Yeah, that'd be tough.
There's nobody individually that, I'll be honest, it's not really super noticeable in these games. I feel like even they're not, it doesn't, I was really excited for how potentially this is going to play out considering how I think the challenge system would make a lot of sense in the majors in the very near future. I was excited to like see it. I can't say that there's been like a whole lot of instances in the AAA games that I've been watching, or at least ones that have come in any significant leverage situations. I'll pay closer attention like moving forward, but I'll be honest, there hasn't been like a ton of instances really worth noting on that.
Okay, yeah. I knew it was going to be going to be a hard question to answer because you can't look at the box score and you guys really have to be paying attention. So I was curious if, you know, just like we say, Yelich, when he was coming up the system, has a great eye for the zone. Like, the umpire was stealing strikes from him, and Tommy and Rich were, like, arguing on TV that Yelich knows the zone better than the umpire. So I was remembering that, and I was like, which player has good eye right now?
Yeah, because I'm looking through, like, you know, the MLB research. So there's nothing about
that. There was an instance in today's AAA game. Jeff Hart leave on the mound, bottom of the ninth inning, 3-2 pitch, and he painted a sinker on the outside corner in a 3-2 count that would have been either a walk or a strikeout. They called it a strikeout, and because it was the bottom of the ninth anyway, that's when the Cardinals called for a challenge right there, and it was upheld. So that was an example from today's game. And yeah, just from my vague memory, you see them more often later in games when they have nothing to lose at that point. But yeah, I like it. It is extremely seamless the way that they integrate it into the games. But I don't necessarily boost. I can't think of a single player who I would like boost their prospect stock or lower it based on those borderline calls. I don't think there's been like, I haven't seen any player that's been involved in more than a couple of them this entire season so far.
It's interesting to me, and I agree with you, Elias, that I can't really pinpoint one player and say, like, okay, this player is doing it and the rest of these guys. It's few and far between that it happens is what I'll say. And the reason for that I will say is that I think it's kind of interesting that they try it out at such a low level. Of course, you got to try something out somewhere, right? And, of course, the Florida State League has been kind of the baby for this. They did the ABS system, and now they're doing ABS with challenges that we're seeing. So I think there's a modicum of self-respect for umpires from these younger players who are just first entering the league. You don't want to show the umpire up, and maybe they think that they're doing that by requesting a challenge. So I think it's few and far between that you see it for a reason. But yeah, I don't think I would be able to point to one specific player and say that he's doing it and this guy's not.
If you guys like the way this is done, like the challenges and stuff, what's keeping them from going one step forward and just simply having, you know, the way to just call every single one from the electronic strike zone? Why do we have to have challenges still? Why not just skip that step and have every single call correct?
Hey, man, great question. I think that's where everything is being led to. I think if they can prove that it's consistent and that it's accurate, like you have to knock down the umpires, and that's where the fans wanted to go. And I think that's where the players want, where it's just give me a strike zone that will be the exact same for every player through the whole game. Like, I don't care if it's wide, I don't care if it's you know, big, but just give it a consistent zone, and the players will adapt.
They did that last year in the Florida State League for half of the games at each stadium. They did that at each home stadium for half the games, except for Daytona, because they don't have Statcast, so they couldn't do it in Daytona. So that was like the only part where like they just didn't have it. So they split it up for like, okay, half of your home games will have it, and then the other half of your home games won't have it. Okay. And the quality of at bats, you could see it go up, and that's really important. Of course, as you know, at the minor league level, is great. And just like you said, you know for sure that that's a fucking strike. You know what I mean? Or that's a ball, right? So, yeah, I agree with you. Like, why do we have to have this whole middleman challenge, this challenge, that? You put it on the player to challenge it. No, get the call right the first time, man. I agree with that.
And if I remember correctly, like, I think it was a 2021 spring or maybe 2020 spring where, yeah, they already – Michael Hill was our teammate, and it was 2021 at least when he was already with the league, that he's sitting by and will play. The strikes are being called by the PA the minute the ball is thrown. And like strike ball right away. I don't know why they don't just, you know, fucking do that. You dope.
Sean's here, so I'm sure Sean has a good question. Probably our final question, we think, unless someone else has something.
Hey, I feel this is a much simpler question. I feel bad. I'm kind of departing from AP Marlins to more just a general general opinion, but. Do you have a sense for when you've been just, you know, talking to the players, or any chance you've had to have a read of, you know, the people running the team, I guess, where their heads are at on their, you know, struggles right now offensively? So, like, is it more of that, oh gosh, if only Cooper didn't get that stomach bug, if only Gene wasn't having this slow start, but we're sure, we're turning it around today? Or do you think they know that they need to make changes? Because I guess, like, my concern
during Sandy's press conference, that he thanked the bullpen, he thanked the defense, but he didn't thank Malaya at all. I did notice that.
Okay. They, I guess it's just that my concern is that they're not gonna.
Guys in a couple weeks, so I guess that'd be a better Isaac or Kevin question.
I feel like I think they need to do something, but I'm concerned to say whoa because they'll talk themselves out of it because of stomach bugs and Abby having three good games before he hit the IL.
You're basically asking like where their mindset is at.
Yeah,
but they've acknowledged it.
They feel pretty good. I will say these. I mean, besides the clubhouse being a good vibe, and I know I think everyone could attest to that. At least the ones that have been there, they know where they're at. They know
night and day from last year, I would say.
Yeah, 100%. And you know they want to win. That's the bottom line. And I think there's no excuses as to, you know, an injury this, an injury that. And obviously an injury is going to hurt your lineup and your team, but they know that they have to win with the players on that team. And, I mean, yeah, they're pretty high on where they're at in terms of where they want to be and you know, in the coming months. And probably, I mean, the next probably set day would be where they're at, you know, a couple weeks before the trade deadline. But we're still ways away from that.
And I don't think Skip's a guy that's just going to lay down and fall flat either. I mean, Donnie kind of did that last year after the meeting. Like, he lost that, and he just kind of gave up at one point. All love to Donnie, but that's just kind of like the way he managed. I think Skip's got a lot more fight. He's got a lot more pride. We've seen it early on this year. Even late in games, he's still making logical decisions, things of that nature.
And are you sure? Because there's times where they've been down by a lot, and then he just puts the Devin Smeltzer to finish the game off. So,
well, like, it feels like more like he's throwing the game players and that kind of stuff. That's a whole different entity. That's when you're like really out of it. But if they're down 3-4 runs, I don't see him entirely folding.
No,
that Atlanta game last week, that was a little different.
Yeah,
but point is, I think Skip has some pride. I think he wants to win games. This is his first year as a manager. He's pumped to be there. And I think the honeymoon phase is over, and I think he's going to help lead his team. Skip strikes me as a lot better leader than anything Donnie could have ever been.
Jeez. And I will say, the guys I've spoken to, you know, they really like Skip. They do. They're very high on him. I've only heard good things about Skip thus far, and obviously it's only like a month or two into his regular season tenure, but, you know, even before, he's been great, so...
I mean, he's been around winning teams. He was he was with the Padres at the start of their run they've been on. He's been with the Cardinals. Cardinals have been won the NL Central a couple times with him. Did he win one World Series or two World Series? I think he only won one.
Two. He just wasn't on the roster
for 06 Cardinals, 2011 Cardinals?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That's what I thought. Okay. All right. Well, yeah, two World Series. He's been around winners. That's a winning culture in St. Louis. Not so much this year. We have a good friend from there, but yeah.
Oh Lord. No, the one thing I'll say, Grant, on this is that the guy doesn't bullshit. I mean, I think you said this the other day too. Like, this guy doesn't bullshit. Like, he's gonna call it for what how he sees it. Like, you screw up. Like, the Jazz play in center field in spring training. Like, he was like, yeah, he should have caught the friggin' ball. Like, he's like, he's a guy, right. He should have caught it. Like, he's going to call it for what it is. And there's no excuses, which is a great way to run a team. Transparent communication is definitely really important, and this guy definitely does that. So, and when he doesn't know, he's going to tell you he doesn't know. Like, I asked him a question in spring training. He's like, I don't know. I'm not going to give you an answer right now, but I'll let you know.
So, the Victor Mesa question.
Yeah, I asked him about the Mesas. They were on the spring roster. They were on the roster for the day for the game. I was like, have you seen anything from these players? I know you're on the backfield. He's like, nah, I can't give you anything right now, but I'll let you know. And then, of course, lo and behold, Junior hits a walk-off. So I'm sure he had something after that, but that's all right. But anyways, like I said, he's going to be honest, which is really important. And I like Donnie. I love Donnie. He's a great, great human being. Those of us who have talked to him can tell you. Everybody in here that knew Donnie or ever communicated with him, he's fantastic.
He's a great dude.
He didn't have that modicum of, you know, just being open, transparent. He would give you a great answer and an honest answer, but it was dressed up. You know what I mean? At times, it was dressed up to be like, yeah, these guys are developing. No, this guy wants to win, and it's clear.
You had to pose your question in a correct way for him to not dodge it.
Right. I feel like. Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
No, it was at the Bean. That's where he did his calling from. Nice.
He played that all day, and then the game went long. He's like, all right, I got to run there.
No, I didn't know. All right, did you guys talk about Yuri's start today? He looked really good.
Yes. We spent extensive amounts of time on
Yuri. No, I didn't. Okay.
We may have talked about it more than what actually happened on the field this week.
Shout out, Yuri.
We talked a lot about Yuri.
I don't know if we talked about Gene Segura enough, though. I don't know. We may have skipped him.
All right.
I did think that we missed a little bit of Gene Segura. No. Okay, please, no. We find a way to add in the question.
I think we know.
Carver and Eli, who would you rather have, Xavier Edwards or Nassim Nunez?
Xavier, but it's just Xavier.
But you got to keep one of them.
Right now or long term?
What I don't know. I guess when they're not exactly the same level. I don't know. Now for the next 6 years.
That's a clear answer.
Not really.
Segura
or Edwards, right?
No, Xavier Edwards or Nassim Nunez.
I thought you said Segura or Edwards. I was like, what?
Obviously,
no, that's a little better question.
I like Edwards, but I think Nassim probably.
Next, Kevin, I said who's going to have a better major league career earlier, Amaya or Nunez?
That one
had some thought to it.
That one does have thought, yeah.
What does Xavier do that's actually better than Nassim? I mean, he's not even... Maybe a backup center fielder, but he's not a shortstop anymore. I mean, they moved him off as a shortstop. I think it's hard to say that... Are they even equal in terms of power? Or I think Nassim has hit more homers recently. There's just no power with Xavier either. And as a base runner, I don't think anybody is as good as Nassim is. You go through everything, and it's like, Xavier was even a slightly higher regarded prospect originally. That's great, but there's a reason why they were able to get him for a couple lottery ticket pitchers. And the fact that was he even the main part of that trade, or was Chagua the main part of that trade? I think that kind of answers where I'm at.
For me, it's just because Edwards, I feel, has the higher floor as a hitter.
And Nassim's floor is very low because of the big question about whether he can hit at all at the highest level. Right. And with Xavier, like, even a small sample, I kind of liked what I saw with Edwards. But overall, I think that the ceiling is significantly higher with Nassim. What's that significant of a difference? And he's a little bit younger, and there's just more things pointing in Edwards' direction right now.
The thing you got to say is that both of these guys, both Edwards and Nunez, know what they want to do at the plate. The approach is so good for both these guys. They have a great approach. They're going up there for base hits. And they know it. They know they don't have power. They know themselves very well. They are trying to come into more power, which apparently Nassim has tried to do and done to his opposite field on three occasions this year, at least. And I think Nassim is showing more consistent hard contact, even more so than Xavier Edwards. So, like I said, I mean, they're both similar players, but like Eli said, Nassim has a true home at shortstop. He's way better on the bases than Edwards, whereas Edwards, I think, is just some kind of a utility player, maybe a third baseman, maybe. This guy Nunez is impressive to me, and I would say Nunez. If I had to pick between the two, I would say Nassim.
Unlimited potential.
Sky's the fucking limit, bro. You know it. Come on.
All right. We got two. We'll take two more questions. This is almost been going for an hour and a half. Romeo has his hand up. Nabi wanted to speak, so we'll go Romeo, then Nabi. Then we'll
I think Claudia had a question too.
I won't. Am I the only one that doesn't think that Joey Reed can play is a good third base coach? I don't think he's good at third. He just doesn't make the right decision that there's a third base coach. Dude has, in his entire 8-year career, has 20 outfield assists at home. And you don't send John Birdie home? You stop him at third base? You could have tied the game. I'm sorry. That's just a very bad call, and I've seen him do it multiple times. And
anything's better than Al Patrique, dude. I don't know what that dude was doing last year.
Oh my God. I was gonna say he's like the nicest guy in the world.
I don't know what he was doing.
He was a stop sign.
Yeah, it was just a little run on Jody Reed. I feel like he had a mistake. And before you go, Navi, real quick, why isn't John Burry stealing? John Burry.
I asked that to Skip the other day, word for word. It's fine.
What'd he say?
It's like when a certain someone asks them, how do you score runs?
Who was that?
I'm not going to say it on
here. Who was it?
It was Barry Jackson, I think. It was Andy Slater or Barry Jackson.
Well, neither of them would surprise me.
Yeah. No.
How do you score runs? Well,
I don't know.
All right, Navi, what do you got? Last one, we'll get out of here.
I'm only bringing it up because you guys are starting comparing Amaya and Zay Rivers and all this stuff. I brought this up on Discord some weeks ago. Not to be taken seriously, but would you guys rather have Gene Segura right now or Eduardo Escobar?
Whoever the opposite is who we want. That's
okay. Eduardo Escobar is equally as ass and would have been a trade within the division. But they have similar profiles. But like,
depends on what you give for Eduardo Escobar.
There was that thing from the Miami Herald that said like, oh, the Mets, the Marlins and Mets were discussing Eduardo Escobar because they were going to talk about bringing back.
It's like the Ozuna swap. So let me ask you this. Would you rather have a Taco Bell shit or would you rather have a Chipotle shit?
Navi, can I ask you a question? Did you ever play third base in Little League or high school or anything like that? Did you ever play third base?
No, I was only
up. I was going to say I would take you over Segura, but yeah.
I just thought it was a fun comparison. I think they're similar age, similar contracts, similar production, similar build. So, you know.
Yeah. They were interested in Escobar originally too when he was a free agent the previous offseason. And like I remember Miggy Rowe was pushing for him when they had a lot of Venezuelans on the team. Just bring his buddy in here. And I was surprised in the same situation. I was kind of surprised how little money Segura got. I was surprised that Escobar at the time was able to be had for only $10 million a year when he was kind of productive. But these teams can kind of see the cliff coming sometimes. So with Escobar last year, he had a power surge at one point that it covered up, that bumped up the overall line to respectability. But overall last year, he was very ordinary. And then this year, as you mentioned, he's kind of benched at this point. They brought up Brett Beatty, and it doesn't seem like Escobar's getting his job back anytime soon. So they were that. And I think the Marlins are, maybe there was something that they were interested in Beatty as well, but that would have been obviously a much more expensive trade to try to get there. We'll see.
And would have been better than what they have right now when you look at the numbers. I know it's like what sample size
for him, but you probably have to give him a pitcher. That's probably like a Dax Holtz.
Fulton for a 34-year-old.
No, God, no.
I would say you're a terrible trade evaluator.
I was saying it would probably take a decent to go get Beatty.
Maybe. You're right.
Okay.
No, that was like a joke. All right. Finish it up.
All right. Have a good night, guys. That's all we've got. Unless you think you can ask your question, not make us all go into a 5-minute debate.
Okay. Is this the first time? Not the first. I know it probably isn't. But have I still got all three games this series, right? Is that one of the first times I think he's ever, like, it's the first time he's done it in a Marlins jersey. How often does that really happen?
Who?
Arise. He struck out in all three games, I believe. He struck out today, right? And then yesterday?
Yeah, he struck out today.
And I'll probably.
Oh, no. We'll check that for you.
That's a Lewis thing to check.
That's true. We'll text him. All right. Well, that's all we got for this week. Good to be back. Apologies for last week. I was busy last week, but we're back on the train here. Do the same time next Sunday. We got the series preview stream tomorrow. A little bit of a late one. We got the West Coast series. Let's just hope it doesn't all come crumbling down. Stay tuned for all the content we have this week coming out on Fish Stripes, and we will see you guys next week.